So basically, if you remember of the dream that Daniel explained that Nebuchadnezzar had, and as soon as he explained it, Nebuchadnezzar did indeed recognize that that was his dream. It had a head of gold, it had a chest and arms of silver, it had a belly of Nehoshet, and it had legs of iron and feet of iron mixed with clay. And then a stone was taken out of a mountain and it was thrown and it knocked the whole figure over and the whole thing just fell apart. It just turned into dust. And the stone, meanwhile, became a great mountain, right? That was what we had learned. So I'm going all the way back to the Malbim on at the very beginning where he starts and he says, you are the head of gold. You are the head of gold. I'm going back to Lamed Tet, the Malbim Lamed Tet, where he says, Ubatrach tukum chara. After you, there's going to be another kingdom. So you, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, you are that head of gold, right? And then afterwards, there's going to come another kingdom that's lesser than you. And I want to read the Malbim here. Atabe erlo mashal hakesef. This is what we didn't do. What is the mashal of the silver? Shahu achar hazahav b'madrega. That is lesser than gold in its worth. Shezeromez alchut sheyamod acharav. It's hinting about the kingdom that's going to come after Bavel. Shahu malchut madu paras. That is the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Shahu malchu achare. It's very, very different. Ratzalomar mi minacher. And it's totally different in its nature than the ruler, the ruling style of Nebuchadnezzar and the kings of Babel. Kmosha hakesef eino min hazahav, as different as silver is from gold. Vuhu a rav shafel mimcha. It's a little bit lesser and lower than you. Kmosha hakesef lamata b'chashivut min hazahav. Just like silver is less in its worth than gold. Vitzier bo chazeh ushtei zroot, and it's the chest and two arms. Ki ha-malchut hazeh haya mishtei malchuyot madai uparas. So why are there two arms? Because that kingdom is made up of two. It's double. It's Madai Uparas. The first king was Daryavesh the Mede, and the second king was Koresh Cyrus from Persia. So we have, and the interesting thing about this is that the Malbim, throughout all his Perushim, on all of the Sfarim, whenever there's any kind of discussion about the four kingdoms that are going to rule over Yisrael, from this time, from the time of the destruction of Bayit Rishon, then he consistently talks about these three kingdoms, which are first Babel and then Paras. And then he says, Kmosha ra'a b'gemara b'mar'eh, there's another mar'eh coming up. We don't have to talk about that. When we get to it, it'll be bad enough. Right now, we're to deal with this vision. Umalchut shlishit, and there's a third kingdom that's coming of Nechoshet, that is copper, that will rule over the whole land. Ratzalomar hachelak hashlishi shehu habeten. It's the trunk of the body. Shehayu shel Nechoshet were of copper. Merames al malchut hagimel. Shehu Malchut Yavan. The hint is on the third kingdom, which is Greece. Shehu Gam Ken Malchut Acheret Mimenacher. That's also a totally different style of ruling. Kmosha HaNechoshet Matechet Acher. Just like copper is a completely different metal. Umashehu Shel Nechoshet Mipnei shetimshol al kol ha'aretz. And why copper? Because it's going to rule out all of the land. Shehanechoshet moreh al tokef ha'malchut. For some reason, the Malbim says that nechoshet stands for strength of rule. I have a feeling that it's the way we would use the term, not so much copper, but brass. When we say brass, we have a feeling of like strength, brass. Much more nechoshet, we feel, is a little soft. So it might be that what the Malbim was thinking of here was not so much copper, but it was rather brass. It's going to rule over the whole, you know, like we say somebody's brazen, you know, the idea of brass. V'chein kamo shehasrar kolel kol aguf, just like the trunk of the body really is the source of the whole body. Imimenu tzomeach kol aguf, because everything comes out of the trunk. The arms come out of the trunk, the head comes out of the trunk, the legs come out. Vahu shoresh ha'adam, mitzad shehu etz ha'sadeh b'nefesh ha'tzomachat. It's just like a tree trunk, just like a man is compared to a tree, the trunk of the body would be compared to a tree trunk. Kein t'malei malchut Alexander et kol ha'aretz. That's the way the kingdom of Alexander the Great, which is the beginning of Greece as a kingdom, as a ruler, is going to spread over the whole land. You know, Greece lasted for a very long time. Greece, very early on, Greece was way before the time of Alexander the Great, but it was kind of an amalgamation of several different islands there and several different small kingdoms. What Alexander the Great was able to do is he was able to unify it into a major kingdom, into the Greek Empire. And then, of course, his generals took over. And so we have the gold head, which is Babel. We have the chest and the arms, which, excuse me, I'm going to take a drink, which is the silver, which is Persia and the Medes and the Persians. And now we have the brass or the copper, which is the Greeks. Umalchut revi'it tihyeh chazaka kabarzel. And then the fourth kingdom is going to be as strong as iron, which can break or grind down. In other words, iron will either shatter or it'll smush anything that it hits. Atam afaresh mashal habarzel. Now he's explaining the mashal of barzel. Sheromez al malchut haravi'it shehi malchut romi. And it's hinting on the fourth kingdom, which is the kingdom of Rome. Uvazeh lo amar acharayim. He didn't say it came afterwards, because if you remember, Greece sort of at a certain point kind of just went into Rome. Lo amda pit'om. It didn't really stand up all of a sudden, but it was really ruling at the same time as the kingdom of Yavan, it tells us. Aval haya malchut atzum. But once it really took over, it was an extremely strong kingdom. V'lachein tzihir ha'yirechayim v'hashokayim sheshnehem shayachim l'perkei haregel. That's why the thighs and the legs, it's like they're both really part of the foot. So Greece just kind of goes into Rome. In other words, they're almost like one part. And then Rome, of course, the leg, the what we would call, what do you call it? The calves, the main part of the leg from the knee down. That's the iron, and it's a very, very strong kingdom. And they were as strong as iron from two points of view, because either, I'm going to tell this to you orally, either what Rome did is either they conquered and they took over, or if they could not conquer, or if there was a problem like the relationship with Yehuda, they just smashed. They just tried to grind them into the ground. So that was Rome. I'm going back now to the to this. And I'm going now to Mem Aleph in the Malbim. And the fact that you saw in this Malchut Revi'it that they're the raglayim, the feet that are the very end of the body, Pirkei HaRegel Achronim, Pirkei HaRaglayim Ra'am Mehem Cheres Shel Yotzer Umehem Barzel. He saw that the feet, in other words, the legs were made totally of iron, but the feet were partially iron and partially clay. And remember, we were trying to understand last week, iron and clay don't mix. So what you have is pieces. You have pieces of iron and pieces of clay. And of course, that stands for the fact the kingdom of Rome will split up for this two legs. And the two legs stand for, and this is one of the philosophies of the Malbim that he very strongly adheres to, that it breaks up into Eastern and Western religions. And he doesn't mean the Eastern and Western Christianity, he means Christianity and Islam. In other words, those strong kingdoms, they're going to split up after a while. There will be Christianity and Islam. And then as history goes on, there will be small kings, 10 toes. 10 stands for many, right? 10 toes that will sometimes be strong like the iron and sometimes be weak like the clay. But the iron will always be there. And they will, from time to time, rule over the world. And sometimes the Christianity will be stronger, and sometimes Islam will be stronger. Until, and that's what we're up to now, until the time that an Evan, I'm talking English and Hebrew, a stone will come out of the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Did I make that clear? Are you okay with it, Chani?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically it says, Bein Malchut Edom u'Bein Malchut Yishmael yimtzu'u melachim chazakim v'chalashim. He refers to it as the kingdom of Edom and the kingdom of Yishmael, right? Yishmael, of course, is Lam, and Edom is Christianity. There will be sometimes strong kings and sometimes weak kings. Think for a moment about the picture in Spain, where sometimes the Christians were the stronger ones, and then the Muslims invaded and they took over, and then the Christians kicked them out. And so he's saying, and we're going to get to the stone right now, which I'm going to read in the Malbim Mem Dalet, Uviyomehendi Malchut Ona, in the days of these kings, meaning those lesser kings that will rule over the world towards the end. But Heu Ela Hamalachim Hamarumazim Be'etzpaot Haraglayim Shehem Hamalachim HaAchronim Sheyu Bizman HaGeula. So at the time that those kings will rule that are the mixture of iron and clay, which is the time very close to Geula, to redemption, Yakim Eloka Hashemayim Malchut Hashemayim La'olam, the God of heaven, will raise a kingdom that will never be destroyed. Ratzalomar Malchut Sheta'amod La'olam Veloti Vatel. It will never be destroyed, this kingdom. Umalchut La'am Acharon Lotish Tabach. Ratzalomar Gam Lota Azov Sheyimloch Ima Am Acher. Nobody will ever rule with it. In other words, it'll never be destroyed, and no other kingdom is going to rule with it. Kihi Tiye Malchut Achat. Lo Zulata, it's going to be one kingdom, there won't be another one, and that kingdom is going to last forever. That takes care of the dream. So basically, if we go back for a moment, then there's a hint to Nebuchadnezzar that his kingdom is not going to last forever, right? That's really the basis of his dream. We learned last week that Nebuchadnezzar was feeling very proud of himself. He had been able to be the first empire as an empire because he did not let the nations that he didn't destroy the nations that he ruled over. He kept them under his thumb. He was the first emperor, the way we understand empire. And he was being very proud and wondering what was going to happen afterwards. And basically, this dream is saying, I got news for you, Nebuchadnezzar. Babel is not going to last forever. Your children and children's children are not going to rule. There is going to be a constant change of leadership in the world until something is going to happen at the end of days. And the Malbim tries to match it to history as he understood it. So what he's saying is, this is what happened. Babel was taken over by Paras, and Paras was taken over by Yavan, and Yavan was taken over by Roma, and Roma split up, and then there were all these small kings that ruled the world until the time of the Geula. Okay? What do you think should have been the reaction of Nebuchadnezzar? Let's go a little bit further before you answer, even think of an answer to that question. But we're going to start from Pasuk Memhei. Kol kaveil di chazaita. Everything that you saw, therefore, everything that you saw, di mitura it gezeret even di lobiadayin, that from some mountain a stone was cut off, not with human hands, vahadeket parzla nechasha chasma kasma udahava, and ground down the iron and the copper and the clay and the silver and the gold. Notice that it's all mixed up here, the different metals. It's not in the same order. They're all mixed up. Ella, Rav Hodal Malka, the great God, Ella Rav is the great God, made known to the king, Madi Leheveya Hardana, what is going to happen after your time? The Yatziv Chelma, and this dream is true, Yatziv. Umeheman Pishrei, and its interpretation is trustworthy. You can trust what I'm telling you, O great king. What I'm telling you, the interpretation is the truth. Pasuk Memvav, Beidayin Malka Nebuchadnezzar, Nefal al Anpohi, Ula Daniel Sagad. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and he bowed down to Daniel. And he started calling his servants and saying, we have to bring karbanot to him. In other words, we have to treat him as a god. Mincha is a meal offering. Nesachim is the wine that goes, nesach, that goes with the meal offering. And he's basically saying, he's a god. If he was able to tell me my dream and interpret it, then we have to treat him as a god. We have to worship him. Ane Malka l'Daniel v'amar min kishot. It is true, the king raised his voice and said to Daniel, it is true, ki elahachan hu ela Elohim. It is true that your God is the God of all gods. If you notice, it doesn't really say anything in between about that Daniel did not allow them. We understand from the context that when he said, that when Nebuchadnezzar said, let's make karbanot, he's like a god. He didn't allow them to do this. And he said, no, 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 it's all from the God in heavens. And so the king answered him and said, in truth, I understand now that your God is the God of all gods, Umare Malchin, and he's the one that teaches all kings, Vigalei Ruzin, and he reveals secrets, He's got to be the greatest God there is, that you were able to reveal this secret. And there's something I think very interesting here. And I wanted to get to a certain point in which basically what the Malbim explains is, I'm going to tell it to you orally because I can't find the exact place. The Malbim explained that what the idol worshiping mind knew that there was some ruling power that was above any of the idols that people worshiped. The idols were considered like this great, we could use the term of Plato and Aristotle, you know, like a first cause. There is a first cause. And then he has all these servants, and the servants do the work of this first cause. In other words, there's a God of the rain. There's a God of the of growth. There's a God of whatever, of the sea. I'm trying to think of, you know, a Greek mythology and all that. So in other words, what he's saying is not that I don't believe in the idols. He's not saying that. He's saying that I know that there is a first cause. I know that there's a God of all gods. It has nothing to do with the fact that I worship idols, because the idols are all the emissaries of that particular God. And that's what he's saying here. He's saying, Daniel, I know that your God is that first cause who really is behind everything that happens in the world. Memchet, Edai Alkala Daniel Rabbi Umatnan Ravavan. At that point, Daniel, the king made Daniel great. In other words, he made him into a high position, and he gave him many gifts. Sagia Nyahavle, that he should have a lot of honor. Vahashlite al Kolavel. He wanted him to rule on all of the kingdom of Bavel. In other words, what he's saying is, one moment. Gotta take a drink. He kind of makes Daniel, he wants to make Daniel into a viceroy type figure. Think of Haman. Very, very similar. A viceroy type figure that would be almost like a second to the king, that's honored by everybody. V'rav signin al kol chachime Bavel, and that he should also be the head of all of the wise men of Bavel. He's kind of giving him, or wants to give him, a double position. He wants to be his viceroy to the entire kingdom, and he also wants to be the chief. He wants him to be the chief of all the chachamim. And Daniel says something very clever. Daniel ba'amin malka, Daniel requested from the king, umani ala vidita di medinat Bavel l'shadrach meshach v'avadnego, and he asked him to appoint on the work of the kingdom, sort of like a misrad achutz, sort of like, you know, the one who is in charge of the kingdom. Why don't you give that job to Shadrach, Meshach, and Avadnego, meaning Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, v'Daniel Bitra Malka, and Daniel should always be with the king. He should always be the advisor and the chief of the Chachamim to the king. So the king, it would seem, agreed to this. And he agreed that Shadrach, Meshach, and Avadnego should be his emissaries to the entire kingdom. And Daniel, so to speak, takes his position, which he holds all during the time of Nebuchadnezzar, as the chief advisor, so to speak, the head of all of the chachamim and the magicians. He is in charge. That is the end of Perek Aleph. Okay, do we have any questions about the background? Now I'm going to ask you that question again. Why do you think this dream was revealed to Nebuchadnezzar? And what should have been his reaction? Hard to answer. I know that's not an easy question. Why was the dream revealed? It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to tell him something. You are not the end all be all. You know, you're not going to be in charge. There's somebody else in charge. Remember that he saw a statue. A statue who has life of its own. That's really the lesson. The way Nebuchadnezzar saw the future that Nebuchadnezzar saw was that has no life, which means it's made by somebody. There's somebody else in charge. So the message to Nebuchadnezzar is you are not the one in charge. And he's in charge.
It's because he thinks, he originally wanted to know who, if his sons and grandsons will take over his kingdom. He never thought that his kingdom would disperse. And Baruch Hu is telling him, forget your children, you're gonna last, but afterwards you will be dispersed and others will take over out of your family.
And maybe change some of your ways, Nebuchadnezzar. Or maybe ask a little bit about what you could do. Nebuchadnezzar was a very autocratic monarch, not a benign at all. The kings of Persia were benign monarchs, but Nebuchadnezzar and his son and grandson, who were the only ones that came after him, were not. They were not concerned really about the good of the people at all. We're going to see that. Some very, very interesting things. But we're coming now to really the exact opposite of what we would have hoped. So look at the beginning of the next parak. Nebuchadnezzar Malka, Avad Salem Didahav. Nebuchadnezzar's reaction is that he made a great statue, a great tselem of gold. In other words, he made a statue all of gold. From the whole body was of gold. Ruma amin shitin, the height was 60 amot. Petoye amin shot, the width was 6 amot. Akime bevigat dura bimedinat bavel. And he set it up in the Bik'ah, in the valley of Dura, in the kingdom, the Medina, actually, of Bavel. In other words, very, very simple, what the Nebuchadnezzar's reaction to this, we're going to look at the Malbim and see what he says. He set up an image totally of gold, and he set it up in Bik'ah Dura,